We're back with our coverage of Inauguration Day here on WNYC, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Also speaking to people all over the world. In a few moments, we'll be speaking with a Middle East analyst for Al Jazeera. But first, we thought we would go to the Bronx. Hi, Letitia.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Well, I'm calling because, first of all, I am a single black woman raising three biracial young men. And to be involved in this historic day for our world, for our nation to see, is beautiful and it's priceless.
How old are your kids?
My oldest, he'll be 21 Valentine's Day. My middle son, 18. My youngest, 16.
And what have they told you about their reaction to this election? Because up until now, young people have not been have become less and less involved in politics in recent years.
Mm-hmm. That is true, even myself included. But my sons, they were so moved. I mean, their waters was just agitated in a good way to want to vote, to get up and to talk to people, to be inspired, to be, you know, inspiration for other people. I mean, my oldest hurried up and got his business together to go vote. And my middle son, he was really upset because his birthday is November 9th, so of course he missed, you know, Election Day. But he wanted to vote, and in his heart he knew that, you know, change is coming. And, you know, he goes to school where there's so many different races, and you have other people from other countries where they're fighting with people from other races, and he doesn't see why. He doesn't see why. He said, this doesn't make any sense. But even if the world today, we do not come together because we love one another, but to come together to help. Because if you put me down and you hurt me, it's only going to come back around to you. You know, we all have to live together, no matter where we are in this world.
Thank you so much for calling us, Letitia. We go now to Lamis Andoni, a Middle East analyst for Al Jazeera. He joins us now from Amman, Jordan. Hi, Lamis.
Hi.
Was this election cycle closely watched in the Middle East? Because we heard a report today on NPR that in some parts of the Middle East, people have paid absolutely no attention. They just see this as business as usual.
Well, it depends where you are. I mean, people are still distraught by the war, what is perceived here as the Israeli destruction of Gaza and the American support for the Israeli war on Gaza. So people are demoralized. However, it is closely watched, at least by the intelligentsia and politicians and journalists. And it is recognized as an historic day. The significance of the first African-American becoming president of the U.S. as an indication for the struggle for justice universally is recognized. However, because of the history and the record of the U.S. Policies in the region, people are not sure that this is a real break from the business as usual in the region, which is for the U.S. We are at the receiving end of the U.S. policies, and people here see the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the American support for Israel.
Did people interpret the ceasefire in Gaza as being timed for today's ceremony?
Yes, at least tactically so, that Israel was able to inflict as much destruction on Gaza, and it stopped in time for the ceremony so that it will position itself for the new presidency and not to embarrass Obama. The view here is that it's all been a cynical calculation for the presidency, yes.
But he did say specifically that he was going to try to get out of Iraq as soon as possible. In fact, he has pledged to remove troops from Iraq within 60 months. Has that heartened people?
Getting rid of Bush in that era is welcome here.
But are people at
all
worried? Go ahead.
However, you know, people here closely watch the words. In his policy statements, he also said that he supports the Obama. I mean, Obama said that he supports the remaining of what he called residual forces in Iraq. And people are wondering what that means. Residual forces, are these forces to be deployed against Iraqis or used against Iraqis or against countries in the region? So there are many questions. Secondly, the team he has, Obama has chosen, has appointed as part of his team are very pro-Israeli, except if the reports the report we've read in the Washington Post today is true, it will be the only aberration will be George Mitchell. We haven't seen any sign of a real break in terms of the U.S. support for Israeli policies.
Now, the president addressed Muslims in his speech. Let's listen to a little clip from that.
To the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward based on mutual interest and mutual respect. To those leaders around the globe who seek to sow conflict or blame their society's ills on the West, know that your people will judge you on what you can build, not what you destroy. To those who cling to power through corruption and deceit and the silencing of dissent, know that you are on the wrong side of history, but that we will extend a hand if you are willing to unclench your fist.
Now, Lemis, didn't that sound like he was extending an olive branch to the Muslim world?
Yes, that was an important emphasis in his speech, and it was hopeful. However, he followed that by singling out what was obviously a message to what he sees as Muslim extremists as the main force or the main force of evil. That means it's the continuity. This language, we're used to this language from Bush to mean the continuation of the war on terror. And the war on terror, as it has been conducted and in its ethos and it's the principle of the war on terror, has caused a lot of destruction, has caused more repression in this region. So it's a mixed message. He's a great orator. He's inspiring. I mean, he has depth in understanding the struggle for justice and racial issues. So we see an inconsistency between some of his words and his pledges, his political pledges and political statements about the continuity of the war on terror.
But the war on terror came as a result. Lemis, the war on terror came as a result of the 9/11 attacks. They seemed unprovoked at the time. How does the United States proceed in the light of what happened on 9/11?
It proceeded in a way on a path of destruction of other people's lives. I mean, the lives of people in Iraq was destroyed as well as in Afghanistan. And instead of looking at the crucial, the underlying issues, the core of conflicts in the region, it continued. It supported tyrannical regimes, Israeli occupation, and occupied Iraq. This is what the war of terror is all about. And as a result of the war of terror, Arab regimes that are close to the U.S. adopted laws that are very close to the U.S. Patriot law in America that have made them more repressive. This is what we've seen as a result.
We've been speaking with Lemis Andoni.
It did not solve any problem.
Lemis Andoni is Middle East analyst for Al Jazeera. She gave us a Middle Eastern perspective. She spoke to us from Amman, Jordan. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And as part of this Inauguration Day coverage, we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Also, inviting you to leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And joining us now is Susan from Westchester. Hi, Susan.
Hi, nice to speak with you. I thought that you might be interested in a different perspective, a perspective of somebody who did not vote for Barack Obama, and to tell you how I'm feeling today. And I'm going to sound a lot different from your last caller, that's for sure. I sat watching the inauguration with tears streaming down my face the entire time. And my husband walked in and said, "Why are you crying? You didn't even vote for this guy." And, you know, you just can't help but be moved by the magnitude of what's happening. I think this is a fabulous thing for our country, and I can say that at this point. I feel that our country is in very good hands, in spite of the fact that I didn't vote for Barack Obama originally. I don't see him anymore as a Democrat. I see him as the head of our country, and I think he's an incredibly smart guy. And I hope to God that he will, you know, listen to his briefings and, you know, moderate some of the things, some of his viewpoints that he had originally, and come more to the center. That's my hope.
So you have been influenced by the way he has acted since the election?
Yes. I feel that from what he says, and even some of the stern declarations that he made in his speech today, to, you know, countries that would try to take us down and are against us and don't believe in freedom. Those kinds of stern invocations, I think, are excellent. I think that he needs to make them because, there is a concern on the part of people like me that Barack Obama is naive and that he doesn't understand that evil is evil. And sometimes you just can't sit down and talk to them. To people like that, you know, that they will not be moved by his words.
Well, thank you so much for calling us. We go now to Paul from, Jack, is it? From, North Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, what do you want to talk about?
It's a constitutional question. John Roberts didn't quite give him the right oath of office. It was close. I think he transposed the preposition for two, and he misplaced the word faithfully. What do you have any idea what happens next? Do they just give him the oath again in some private setting? What happens?
I think that we all understood what the intentions were, and we leave it at that. It's like if the marriage ceremony has a couple of misplaced words, you're still married.
I hope you're right.
Thank you so much for calling and pointing that out. But maybe you've caught on to something, and we'll have to check into it. We joined now by Kevin Mishert, who's editorial page editor for the Idaho Statesman. He joins us from Boise. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm okay. John McCain carried Idaho by one of the widest margins of any state in this election. Do you think there's a sense of gloom in Idaho today?
No, I don't think there's so much of a sense of gloom. I mean, I've been hearing from folks who have gone back from Idaho to D.C. for the inauguration and within the state. I think there's some skepticism politically about what an Obama presidency is going to look like and how that's going to affect the West and how it's going to affect how that's going to affect Idaho. But I think there's genuine concern about the economy and genuine concern about gridlock, and I think there's also an impatience here, people wanting to see some results.
Well, he's consistently hit on themes of post-partisanship, but we've heard those kinds of pledges before. Are there any specific policies that President Obama could enact that might win over conservatives in Idaho?
I think his best hope of winning over conservatives in Idaho and maybe in other conservative states is simply to focus on the economy, is to make that job one. I think that, in Idaho, we've had 20 years of growth, really rapid growth, and some of the problems that come with growth, and now we're seeing an economy that's really slowing down, an unemployment rate that's rising, a state legislature that is dealing with some really difficult budget decisions. This economy has changed rapidly in the past year, and that's caught the attention of a lot of Idahoans. So I think if you have a presidency that is focused on the economy and trying to fix the economy, even if we disagree about the details, even if some Idahoans feel like, on the details, they may have some concern, I think the focus will go a long way towards alleviating some of their fears that this is going to be their fears about what this presidency is going to be. Is it going to be an ideological presidency, or is it going to be one that's focused on pragmatism and focused on the economy?
Well, what is the state of unemployment in Idaho? Because a large part of what we're about to see is serious public works program.
Well, it's risen rather rapidly. I mean, we were down under 3% for a long time. It's up I believe we're above 6% at this point. And it's, like I say, it's risen rapidly, and it's risen just in the past year and a half. So I think there's a lot of concern about that. I think there's a lot of understanding that there are some infrastructure needs in the state, highway problems that the state can't begin to solve on its own, doesn't have the financial wherewithal to solve on its own. So I think there's some sympathy towards the idea of some public works, a little skepticism within our delegation right now about the size and the scope of what a stimulus package is going to look like. But I think there's some sympathy among Idahoans that, yeah, we need the projects. The projects need to get done anyway. And there's a concern that people need to be getting back to work.
Kevin, thanks for talking with us. Kevin Mitchert is editorial page editor for the Idaho Statesman. And we've been talking to him from Boise, Idaho. We will continue today's inaugural special with some more of your calls. We'll also go to Oakland, California, and we'll be speaking with Todd Purdom about what we can expect from President Obama in the first 100 days. Oh, let's go to Paul from Manhattan. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to let you know that I've been living here in the United States since 1982, and I've raised two boys here. And during that time, although for obvious reasons I explored the possibilities of becoming a U.S. citizen, I never really felt inspired to until today, watching the inauguration of Barack Obama. I felt that finally this is a country in which I can, even after 26 years, I felt a visitor, but not anymore. I feel that I could settle here for the rest of my life and really work, you know, and apply for U.S. citizenship at last.
Well, it's quite different than the transition of power in a country like Ireland, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's a very different procedure there. But I always see, I mean, even though, you know, there were very practical reasons for becoming a U.S. citizen, I'd always felt Irish. But Barack Obama, in his speech, that really felt for the first time that this was uniting the country.
But don't all politicians talk about inclusiveness, Paul?
You know, I've seen it in the U.S. from a New York perspective, and it always seemed that there were very much two countries, especially over, you know, the last 8 to 12 years, and it didn't seem like there was one nation. Now it seems that you know, the U.S. can really move forward as one nation.
Well, welcome to the United States after 26 years. Thank you so much for calling us. Josh Richmond, senior political reporter for the Oakland Tribune, joins us now from California. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. What are your reporters in the field telling you about what's happening in Oakland right now? Because Oakland has one of the largest African-American populations in the state, doesn't it?
It does indeed, and this was a hotbed of support for Obama during both the primary and general presidential campaigns. There were about 8,000 people or more who gathered in our Oracle Arena to watch the ceremonies on a jumbo screen this morning, and there are lots of other large gatherings around town and all over the Bay Area, really. And there's enormous excitement. There's a lot of tears, a lot of cheers, and a lot of people who are saying they didn't think they'd live to see the day.
The San Francisco Chronicle reported several weeks ago that California has largely been shut out from Washington over the past 8 years, despite the fact that you have some pretty prominent members of Congress. Does the state now have an ally in the White House, or do you feel you do?
I think a lot of people here suspect that they do. I think it wasn't lost on people that as the new president signed his cabinet nominations this morning, his first act, he was bookended by Senator Dianne Feinstein of California and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California. There have been some significant appointments to the cabinet from here in California, from the Bay Area specifically. And I think people are looking to this administration for a lot of help because California is finding itself in very, very dire financial straits right now. We've got a $42 billion deficit over this year and next year, the worst situation our state government has ever found itself in. We've got 8.4% unemployment. And I think there's a lot of hope that perhaps the economic stimulus package that the president is pushing is going to help California get out of these doldrums.
How has California fallen so badly? It's still one of the most productive states in the nation.
It is indeed, but there's been political deadlock in Sacramento for years now. This is one of only three states left that requires a two-thirds vote of both chambers of the legislature to pass budget and tax bills. And the Republican minority has prevented us from coming up with a budget plan that is acceptable. The governor had proposed some limited tax increases, although not to the extent that the legislative Democrats had. The Republicans wouldn't hear anything of it. So to some extent, we're going to have to fix our own boat here, but certainly a leg up from Washington would be much appreciated.
So you're kind of looking for a bailout from the new administration?
Well, I don't think that we could possibly expect that they're going to bail us, that Washington, the Obama administration, is going to bail us completely out of our problems. We need to fix our own broken process here. But I think, like many other states, we're looking for at least some sort of acknowledgement, some sort of assistance, some sort of help in the short term to get us through this economic downturn in the very short term and give us enough breathing room to fix our systemic problem.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us, Josh. I hope the governor works it all out and then, of course, returns to the movies and gives us some more thrills. Josh Richmond is senior political reporter for the Oakland Tribune. And we're joined now by Gautam Siddharth, who's news coordinator with the Times of India. He joins us now from New Delhi. Hi.
Hi.
Can you give us a sense of how President Obama is perceived in India, or is India too large a country to get a sense of any consensus?
No, that's in fact rather to the contrary. India has been extremely interested in the whole election process and is, in fact, inauguration. I've just left my newspaper office where the news desk was buzzing with activity and there was a lot of excitement in the air. People were watching, dropping everything and watching the inaugural show. And I can tell you from experience that I have seen other inaugurations before, but there's been never anything quite like this.
But wasn't President Bush relatively popular in India because of the nuclear treaty that he signed with your country?
Well, that's a slightly controversial statement to have come out from the Prime Minister of India. It is not exactly so. I mean, it's a very difficult situation. I think if you're going by the mainstream English language media and television and stuff like that, then perhaps that's the impression one would get. But as far as the larger population of the country is concerned, I think the nuclear deal is really not such a hot issue with the people. And as far as the popularity ratings of President Bush in India are concerned, I think it was not anything overwhelming. You know, it was just all right. Nothing to write home about, actually.
Well, during the campaign, President Obama spoke about potentially sending U.S. troops into Pakistan if there was reliable intelligence that members of Al-Qaeda were there or of Osama bin Laden could be caught. Is that something the Indian public would like to see?
Of course, President Obama's statements on Pakistan have been rather closely observed in this country and for very good reasons, because India has been at the receiving end of terrorism for the past couple of decades. And Kashmir, of course, is one of the reasons. But as far as his statement about going to Pakistan is concerned, yeah, there is this feeling in India that something has to be done about it. It can't go on like this forever. And in fact, that is what brings me to the point about how, the view here in South Asia is that President Obama's attention will have to be drawn towards South Asia, because after all, after West Asia, if there's a trouble spot that calls for world's attention, it's Afghanistan-Pakistan border. Which is actually a heaven to terror mongers.
And of course, the terrible incident in Mumbai has focused the world's attention to that as well. It was the closest thing to Madrid and 9/11 here in New York.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for talking with us. Gautam Siddharth is news coordinator with the Times of India. And remember that we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Chuck from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, you know, I did watch the inaugural speech. I thought it was great, and I was actually heartened by, you know, some of the wording he used, which seemed to reach across the divide, especially the sense that, you know, government may be a solution, but it's not the only solution. But I did want to just comment about the fact that, you know, I believe that the media in particular has made this into almost, you know, like a fairy tale. And, you know, you can't argue about the historic significance, but, you know, the fact is that there are still some people who disagree philosophically. It remains to be seen what he does in office. I think that's a big question mark, but you know, it's kind
But Chuck, isn't that true in every election? And didn't we see something similar happen in the other direction when Ronald Reagan became president? I mean, that's just, we always hope that the new president is going to solve all the problems of the country. And
yeah,
then we're faced with the reality of the situation. Either the president does a decent job or does not do a decent job.
Right, but I just would hope for a little more objective analysis and a little less cheerleading. I mean, I just think that, I mean, it's one thing for you know, people out there to look at it and to be supporters or detractors or whatever, but I think there's a sense that if you're not with Obama, then, you know, you're almost a traitor, at least in the media. And I don't think that was necessarily the case when Reagan came to power. It certainly wasn't the case in 2004, you know, when Bush was reelected. You know, so I challenge the media to respect the diversity of opinion.
Chuck, in another week, reality will set in, and we'll be back to he's done well here, he screwed up there, the same as we always do.
Well,
trust
I
me.
Certainly hope so. I mean, you know, and obviously Obama himself, you know, a lot, he's a bit of a carte blanche. I don't know if even his most liberal supporters know exactly what he's going to do. And obviously, as an American, we hope he succeeds to the extent in fulfilling his duty to protect the nation and, you know, get the economy back up and going.
Thanks for calling us. We're going to go to a little break now. We'll be back with more. Taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And you might also want to check out the Newsweek poll, which is in the new issue of Newsweek, which gives, well, 66% of the American public right now is very or somewhat optimistic about an Obama presidency, 27% very or somewhat pessimistic. Chuck was probably one of those. And then there was a mixed don't know of 7%. The American public right now is hoping for a major turnaround. Of course, as I said earlier, reality will set in as there are successes and failures. That's always the case. But it was interesting to note that health care was the number one issue. 36% of all Americans considered our highest priority. Energy, second. Iraq, just third, even though Iraq was so important in the early part of the Obama campaign. Relations with allies is just behind Iraq at 13%. Iraq is 15%. And Afghanistan at 9%. Afghanistan was another big issue for Barack Obama. We are taking your calls. What did I say? One, yeah, that's the way I dial it. 212-433-9692. And Kevin from Chelsea, you're on the air.
Hey, You know, for me, this really pointed out what awful self-evaluators we human beings are. You know, everybody was so shocked that we could pick an African-American for president. And we sort of profiled ourselves out of seeing how much we'd grown and matured over the years. And we turned out to be a lot nicer than we thought.
You think this is a matter of niceness? Perhaps it was a matter of people feeling a little desperate. George Bush was the most unpopular president in the history of the United States, and perhaps people really did feel that there was need for a change. And I don't know whether Barack Obama would have won the election if not for the way so many perceived the Bush presidency.
I can't argue that, but there was enough room in our hearts. You know, I mean, it would have simply been impossible 15 years ago or 20 years ago, and it's sort of like we've grown. You know, this wasn't such a big deal. We could overlook it and do what we needed to do.
Well, thank you so much for calling us.
Okay.
And we go now to Pepe from Manhattan. Hi, Pepe. You're on the air.
How are you?
I'm okay.
I'd just like to say I'm very proud of being an American by choice, became a citizen this year. And
you're not from Ireland, are you, Pepe? Oh, that was the other guy.
What's that?
You're not from Ireland. Where are you from?
Chile.
Ah.
And I'm very proud of the process of democracy. It works in other countries. Sometimes you need bullets and cannons to get someone elected or put in power. And I feel that other parts of the world will feel about us in a better way, not that we're pushing them around, which is not the case, but that's what people perceive us that we do. And like it looks like this, like he said in the middle of his acceptance speech, he says, "We the people." And that's what this country is based upon. And that's why I chose to be an American.
Now, have you spoken to people back in Chile?
Yes, some of them, they also feel the same way, that it's like a new beginning. You know, whether they're right or wrong, but it's like Americans, for the most part, are good people. It's a good country. We are the country that helped the most in the nations around the globe, and some people forget about that. But for the most part, everybody feels that the country is in good hands.
Well,
I'm not trying to make a commercial.
Chile was a country that was one of the most successful democracies, and then there were the years of the Pinochet dictatorship. So it's a country that also has a strong sense of a new beginning.
Yes, always. Democracy always works. Sometimes it's not perfect, but it's better than...
But do people blame the United States for helping Pinochet come to power?
I don't think, for the most part, the ones that benefit of blaming the game, they will use that as an excuse. But every political process has a beginning and an end. And then in Chile, that's the way it was.
Well, we thank you so much for calling us. And we thank all of you who have participated in today's special inaugural program. We will continue talking about the inauguration on WNYC. Follow us on AM. This is The Leonard LoPage Show. You've been listening to WNYC's special coverage of Inauguration Day. Stay with us throughout the afternoon to hear more about the day's events and reactions. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Sarah English, and Stephen Valentino. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Julia Corcoran and Alex Simons. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. And thanks for listening. Tune in tomorrow. Joan Rivers will be here along with Patricia T. O'Connor taking your calls on the language, dancer Edward Villela, and more. I'll see you then.